there be any that like to lay by the store?
Seventh chapter, Jesus was invited to the house of Simon the Pharisee, and as they were eating, a woman came in, and the Bible simply says that she was a sinner. Perhaps we assume maybe too much from the response of Simon when he noticed that Jesus allowed her to wash his feet, wipe them with the hair of her head. If he knew what kind of woman this was, he would have never let her touch him. So some have assumed that perhaps he was a harlot or a prostitute, but maybe that's just an assumption. But nevertheless, this woman walked into a room that would have been highly unusual for a woman to walk into that kind of environment. But she knew Jesus was there, and she wanted his love, and she wanted his forgiveness. Think about how uncomfortable that could have been. We have no indication that it bothered her one whit when any of those pompous, self-righteous, stuffy men were thinking at the time when she walked in looking for Jesus. We know the story in Luke 19 when there was a wee little man, right? These little folks climbed up in a sycamore tree to see Jesus as he passed along the way. He wanted to see him that badly. I guess he didn't care. I don't know if grown men climbed trees back then very much or not, but he didn't care what anybody around thought when he came and climbed that tree. And Jesus saw him, told him to come down, and that day he was going to come to his house, because salvation had come to his house that day. And then in James 2, there's a story, not of any actual incident, but two men that came into an assembly, one wearing gold and rings and fine apparel, and another man who came in wearing something very poor. And apparently, it could happen that the rich man was treated with more kindness, more attention, and the poor man was treated with somewhat of despite, kind of set for naught, kind of ignored, and actually told to sit over here out of the way, sit on my footstool, while the rich man was given much more attention. And yet I think about what it might have been like for a poor man to walk into an assembly of Christians and wonder how he would be treated if he walked in and he wasn't dressed up like the rest of us, didn't have a nice shirt and a tie on perhaps, maybe just a t-shirt, an old pair of jeans, or maybe an old pair of coveralls, maybe just come off the farm, and how he would be treated by people who were God's people. Our assemblies can be a means of reaching some, no question about that, and found in 1 Corinthians chapter 14. Let's turn over there and hear what Paul said about an assembly of Christians and the effect that could have on visitors, people that were not Christians. In verse 23, therefore, if the whole church comes together in one place and all speak with tongues, and there come in those who are uninformed or unbelievers, will they not say that you're out of your mind? But if all prophesy and an unbeliever or uninformed person comes in, he is convinced by all, he is judged by all, and thus the secrets of his heart are revealed, and so, falling down on his face, he will worship God and report that God is truly among you. There's any question that an assembly can have a positive effect on someone who's an unbeliever. They can come in and hear the gospel preached, hear it sing about, ask questions about why we eat the Lord's Supper, and that can have such an influence, an impact on their heart and minds that they're looking for, apparently, looking for something, someone. And in this case, fall down on their face, knowing that God is being worshiped among those people. And that's the kind of effect we hope that assemblies would have on unbelievers. Inviting lost friends, inviting lost family members to our assemblies is an absolute noble thing to do. We have an example in the Bible of a man who wasn't even a Christian at the time, not yet, not quite, when he invited his friends and neighbors and family to come and hear the gospel being preached in Acts chapter 10, when Cornelius got his household ready to hear the preaching of the gospel when Peter came and told him about Jesus. Think about those stories. And I want you to think a little bit about the kind of impact that you and I can have on those who may come and meet with us from time to time who may not be one of God's children. Thinking about the effort that it might take. I don't know about you, but I can be uncomfortable walking into a certain setting, a group of people that I don't know anybody, anticipate getting to know them, and that makes it a little easier. But I just wonder, what's it like for somebody to walk in these doors? not know a soul here, but just know they're looking for something. Don't even know what it is yet. Don't even know what they think they're looking for the Lord, but they don't have the answers. And they come in here and they sit down among us. And we need to think very carefully how they would get treated by us. I've often observed that those people will leave here with an opinion about us based on how they're treated primarily by the people that are right around them. And so that's why we need to be aware. I'm reminding you of things that you know well, and I think that we do well. But just try to put ourselves in the shoes of somebody else that walks into an assembly, doesn't know us, we don't know them. How would we react? Again, a grown man climbing a tree and a woman in front of several men washing the feet of Jesus, and a man not self-conscious about what he was wearing, those kinds of people can even be a blessing to us. These folks were sinners, and they were looking for Jesus. And I hope we continue to pray that people who are looking for the Lord, people are looking for forgiveness. People are looking for acceptance. People are looking for a group of people that won't judge them on the basis of what they've done in the past, because they've already indicated they want nothing to do with who they've been. Don't want to be judged on the basis of what they're wearing. Don't want to be judged on the basis of how much money they make or the color of their skin, the country they're from. They're just looking for a second chance. And I hope God lets us be used here at Hillview to reach folks like that. I recognize too, by the way, that there are folks who sometimes come and they're not looking for Jesus. I remember, sadly enough, living in Lilburn, and a couple had come to visit us, and the woman was more interested, as we learned later, when Joe and I went out to visit this couple. And I appreciated his honesty. He looked across the room at Joe and I and said, "Well, I got to be honest with you fellas. I'm just looking for a church that's got a basketball team." And we tried to teach a little bit then. But I know that. I know folks will come. We may have some lazy folks that come. They're looking for money. They're not interested in working. Sometimes somebody in business may come and want to join with the church because they're looking for more clients. And maybe sometimes a woman can walk into the assembly and has no intention of no longer living with her boyfriend. She's not like the woman we read about in Luke chapter 7. And I know sometimes those folks come and they go, and we try, but there's no connection made, no real zeal on their part to know the Lord Jesus, and we can't have a positive effect on them because they don't come with the same attitude that these other folks came with. I mentioned a couple of weeks ago that folks are going to come with baggage. We've got to be able to handle that. We've got to realize that some folks have got a past and they need help with that. That's where we bear one another's burdens. We all have some baggage. All of us. Sometimes don't want to admit it, but we do. We all have consequences of past sins, and I want to be willing to help others bear them. Single moms. You know, here's a single mom who knows she's sinned. Again, this is not a woman that's just kind of no remorse, no penitence in her heart. A single mom who's sorry for what she's done. She wants to be a Christian. But then once she becomes a Christian, she wants to be treated like the rest of us. And she would deserve that. Somebody in drug and alcohol rehab, somebody with a DUI conviction. I've told you the story before. That a good friend of mine to this day that I had the privilege of baptizing when he came to visit with us. He couldn't drive right away, because right at that time. I don't remember how he got there that first Sunday, but he didn't have his driver's license. But I remember the way people treated him. They treated him like somebody who was looking for the Lord. There can be a lot of folks in this world, a lot of health problems due to sinful choices. And so those people may come in, and we got to be careful we don't look at them and say, "Oh, no." And that's our reaction sometimes, is that, "Oh, they've got all these problems, and they're going to bring them to us, and are we going to be ready to help them?" Folks are divorced, have to deal with the consequences of that. There are folks who have financially mismanaged their lives, and they're going to come with a lot of baggage because they have, again, we would admit that they have just haven't been very good about handling their money, but they still need us and be helpful and encouraging. So I ask again, how patient are we going to be with folks? How patient would we be with the poor man or Zacchaeus or this prostitute that came into this house? Would we trust them? Trust that they're really looking for the Lord? How patient are we with people and their problems? Drugs and alcohol and sex addictions and false beliefs, long hair and tattoos and crooked teeth. Sad to tell you this, I had a friend of mine who was working with the church, and they had a business meeting, and they had a fellow been visiting there, and apparently all of his teeth weren't exactly lined up straight. And one of the men in that business meeting suggested all the men getting the money together so they could help straighten that guy's teeth. I'm not sure they had baptized him yet, but it was like, we don't want a guy coming in here with crooked teeth. You know, we're going to get his teeth straightened up. Can you imagine somebody bringing that up in a business meeting? Can we put money together to straighten this guy's teeth? If you want to put something together, I could use some of that work myself. But anyway, it's too late now. There's the danger of becoming like Simon the Pharisee. There really is. The danger of becoming comfortable with one another. The danger of just wanting to hold our own. The danger of getting comfortable and not wanting to get out of that comfort zone. I baptized a couple, and one lady came up to me a little bit later, and she said, they just are a strange people. And yeah, they were really a strange couple. They met one another in a drug alcohol rehab center. And they brought a lot of baggage. He died a few years ago. She's still hanging in there, I think. Friends with her on Facebook. Talk to her now and then. I've always found it sad that the woman who told me that they were strange ended up divorcing her husband, I think unscripturally. Now who's strange? The one that's faithful or the one who seemed like she had it all together? I remember what Barry Kurtzebel said about a lot of folks. He said they're quirky. He says we need quirky folks. And that's a good thing. One lady said that some new folks had come in, kind of messed up their church. I don't mean the building, but they were just different. We need to be ready in our lives to reach out and help folks like that, especially those who might even come to us. Visitors to our assemblies are what one preacher said are our most inexcusable missed opportunities. Don't want to let them get by. We need to be careful, thinking about this attitude of Simon, to not consider ourselves righteous and despise others. We don't ever want to think, well, I'm better than they are because I've made better choices. I may not have the baggage they have because I've made better choices, because by the grace of God, I was born into a family of Christians. Mother and father are Christians and grew up meeting with churches, and yet still sinful enough to not pay any attention to that for a while in my life. Those who had the good sense to pay attention to that, what a blessing. What a blessing. We have no right to consider ourselves to be something when we're nothing without Jesus Christ. We all need the grace of God to be saved, just like that woman that walks in, or that publican climbing a tree, or that poor man who wonders, how will I be treated if I'm not dressed up like everybody else? By the way, be careful that we don't treat the rich man with disdain either. You know, the man comes in with a gold ring and a coat on, and he's dressed up really nicely. We look at him and say, well, he's not going to be very interested in the gospel. He may be coming in that day brokenhearted and realize that all of this life of seeking riches has left him just completely empty. He may have read Ecclesiastes one week and realized that his life is completely void of anything good and holy and righteous and eternal. And he comes to us looking for somebody that will help him. Ironically, by the way, the poor man sitting in the audience who's not dressed up very well, like everybody else, can be guilty of disdaining the rich man who needs the gospel too. We can make judgments about others because how they're dressed, and that's not always a good thing, not always a right thing. It's not impossible, Jesus said, for a rich man to learn not to trust in his riches, but to learn to trust in God. And so we need to reach out to those too. Having said all of that, I want to close tonight with the idea of, are people like this going to come to us if they do not come to the assemblies? How can we reach people who are looking for Jesus, who might come to us in environments outside the assemblies. Assemblies are not our only means, or in fact, I don't even believe they are the primary means of reaching the lost. Not at all. Have you ever thought about the book of Acts? I've mentioned this, but I'm going to take the time to do something right now. I'm going to start in Acts chapter 2. And I want you to think about the number of occasions in which the gospel was preached in an assembly of Christians that had met together to eat the Lord's Supper, to contribute, and to sing together, to worship like we do. And I want you to think about this. Acts chapter 2 is not an assembly of a church coming together to worship. It's a group of Jews that had come together and unbeknownst to them about what they were about to hear. That was Peter and the apostles preaching to Jews who had come to Jerusalem to worship on the Passover. On Pentecost, 50 days after the Passover. And so that's a sermon preached. In fact, it's one of the things that's not necessarily frustrating, but I can't find hardly any sermons in the New Testament, in the book of Acts, that were preached in assemblies of Christians. Most of the sermons that were preached throughout this book, Book of Acts, were written, preached in other environments. And that's true of chapter 2. In chapter 3, when all of these people came running to the temple to hear the commotion that was going about because that Peter and John, by the grace of God, Jesus had healed this man, they all came and rushed to Solomon's porch outside the temple. And Peter preached to them. Again, not an assembly of Christians for worship at all. In chapter 4, we hear Peter saying some things that we quote from time to time. There's no salvation in any other name, verse number 12. Who's he speaking to? He's speaking to the council. Got the opportunity to preach to that Sanhedrin along with the high priest. So again, that's not an assembly of Christians at all as you go through the rest of that text. Chapter 7. Mentioned something in chapter 5 when Peter and the other apostles were brought before the council again. Their teaching was not in an assembly of Christians. Acts chapter 7, when Stephen was preaching, wonderful sermon, history lesson, and applies that to the coming of the work of Jesus. When you read that story, who's he talking to? Not a group of Christians. He's talking to that council again. In chapter 8, when Philip went to Samaria to preach and teach, he didn't go there to find a church. There wasn't a church there. I'm glad we don't have this thinking, but I cannot imagine someone saying, well, I'm not going to help support that guy. He's going somewhere where there's not a church. Can you imagine not wanting to support a gospel preacher who wants to go somewhere where there isn't a congregation? We would help support that man because we want him to go and find opportunities to preach the gospel to establish a church. And that's what happens in the book of Acts. In Acts chapter 8, again, Simon preaches in Samaria, not an assembly of Christians. And then certainly the end of the chapter when he has the opportunity to preach and teach to the eunuch. That's not an assembly of Christians. That's a man going home in a chariot. And he has a Bible study with him. Studies the word with him. You can go on through the rest of the book, chapter 10. Peter preaching to Cornelius and his household. That's a home Bible study. That's not an assembly of Christians. They didn't find the church there to worship with. He went to his house and they studied together in his home. He preached the gospel to them. Chapter 16. Chapter 13. Paul and Barnabas out preaching the gospel and they preaching Antioch of Pisidia. Where'd they go? They went to synagogues. Well, synagogues is not where Christians were meeting to worship. It's where Jews got together to study. And so they found opportunities to preach to lost people. And they did that in synagogues because the Jews were yet to believe in Jesus were lost. Chapter 15 is really a Bible discussion. It's not an assembly of Christians where we learn a lot of things about how to establish Bible authority, I think. A council, we call it that, gathering in Jerusalem. But chapter 16, Paul went out to the Sabbath. On the Sabbath, they went out to the river to preach to a group of women who would gather there to pray. Again, not an assembly of Christians at all. The end of chapter 16, certainly not preaching to a congregation of Christian, a group of Christians. He's preaching to a man in his household, in his house, the jailer. So again, the illustration here is that he went out and preached and taught somewhere where the Christians were, or where there were no Christians, so that there would be when he got done to preach. God put him in remarkable circumstances so he could preach and teach. Acts 18 as well. And I go on. And all these lessons. Paul preaching to Felix and preaching to Agrippa. Those were Bible studies and sermons that he, lessons that he gave to men and women in some of those cases, in environments that were not assemblies of Christians. So I tell you all of that to impress upon your mind that the early Christians and the early gospel preachers and teachers, evangelists of the gospel, were going out finding people, looking for people outside the assembly. So most of the teaching of the book of Acts takes place outside the walls of meeting places of Christians. What does that tell us? It tells us, I think, we should be about that same work too. I'm convinced, as we studied a while back, that people came to Jesus because they knew they could. He was approachable because of his character, because of his love. I wonder, and this is just Lee wondering, if Zacchaeus, as a tax collector, knew that Jesus had chosen a tax collector to be one of his 12. And he would have thought, you know, I can find in Jesus somebody who will not judge me because of what I do for a living. Everybody else does. I can do this, and I can do it rightly and honestly and justly, and in fact, I will from now on if I haven't. But I think there's a man I can find companionship and acceptance because he apparently has accepted somebody else just like me. When I think about that, I hope we're that kind of people, that people see us, not shirts and ties and dressed up on Sundays. But they see us as a people every day of the week in jeans and t-shirt, and whatever you wear during the week. And they see somebody that's following Jesus. And they know enough about you and the way you interact with others that they can come to you and to me and ask us about Jesus, why it is we live the way we live. We need as many of us as possible who have decided to be like Jesus. The more the merrier. As we try to grow ourselves, try to learn ourselves to be that kind of people that are going to take the gospel and reach people that are lost. If folks are looking for Jesus, they should find him in us. And it doesn't matter where we are, not just in this assembly, not just in a meeting place 3 or 4 hours a week, but we're going to reach the lost on a personal, individual basis when we decide that outside the walls of this building, we have wonderful opportunities to reach people. Let me close tonight by asking you a question. How should we treat lost people? Let me ask you something. When you were lost, how did you want to be treated? And if you were lost, and we all were, how would you want to be treated? And if we understood what it means to be lost, and what it means for us to realize at one time we all were, then I'm convinced that we would be more about the business, doing everything we can, making sure other lost people can find in us somebody who can share with them the gospel. Again, I realize just as not everybody who comes in this assembly is looking for the right thing. And not everybody out there we're going to reach and try to teach and going to come to us, going to be coming to us with the best and purest of motives. But I still believe it's possible for us to be like the people of the New Testament, the book of Acts, the apostles and the early Christians, that we can have assemblies where people can come, find Jesus in us, but that we also go outside the assemblies and teach and preach and let God use us wherever He puts us, the circumstances in which we can teach. Won't you be encouraged tonight that God can use you, every one of you? Maybe already is. But I want you to think about God being able to use us, no matter what we do and where we are, to reach people that are lost. Thank you for studying with me tonight. Let's sing a song to encourage us. Brent, you've done a good job tonight. Come and lead us in one more song that will encourage us to think very seriously about this wonderful work we have preaching the gospel. Before you do that, I heard the other day an athlete, and he was going through some problems in his life and trying to overcome them, and he wanted to share with others the problems he had and how he was going about overcoming them. And he came to this conclusion. He said, I realize that football is not my life. He said, football is just a platform. My life is this problem and me wanting to communicate to others the solution to the problem. And I appreciated that. And I got to thinking about that, and that's really true. Our whole life is about sharing with people the problem of sin and sharing with them the solution, the remedy found in Jesus Christ. Our work is our platform. Our play is our platform. Our vacations are our platforms. I don't use that enough. I use vacations as a time to get away. Sometimes I wish I used it more as talk to people, interact with people, maybe even talk to people about the Lord while we're out on the road somewhere. My platform is to be used for me to proclaim the good news of the gospel of Jesus Christ. Let's do that. Can we do that? And let's encourage each other to do just that. Brett, lead us. Let's stand and be encouraged. Be followers of Jesus, please.